Thank you, Tom Patton.
Back at the ballpark, ladies and gentlemen, for the second game of the doubleheader between the White Sox and the Boston Red Sox. The entertainment the team has been provided largely. Al Schachter right now is doing a little shadowing of umpire Hubbard. First, as Cal walked up the way, Cal would walk along behind him and make every gesture he did. Now, just now, Hubbard started to dust the plate. So Al, as he dusted them off, why, Al would kick some more dirt over it. Now Al is getting down there and takes the whisk broom and dusts it all up. And then he passes the thing to the umpire, the whisk broom, and then umpire reached for it, he dropped it, then he dropped it, kicked it. You know, Calvert got it before he could kick it, and now he's taking all of the baseballs and dumps them out of the ball bag. He's laying there doing puzzles with them. Finally picks up a few handfuls and starts to help the announcer pick them up, and probably just to get them all picked up, he'll dump them out again, I imagine. Anyway, he has the right umpire down there, a good-natured fella. That's just what he did. He picked them all up and then dumped them all out again. And umpire Hubbard getting more kick out of it than anyone else. Jack walked up and tried to act as though he's going to take a pass at the umpire. That the umpire may believe he's going to hit him, and Al dropped down. Now he ends in his lineup and drops that on the ground. And so the umpire won't reach for it this time. He has to pick it up himself because that's getting into formal business. Now the announcers are getting to worry because Al's coming over and starts to play marbles with the baseballs out there. Al's really had more fun today than anyone. Hubbard held the Sox lineup to close to the visiting team up to Jack that time, and Jack walked up and then grabbed it fast so that Hubbard couldn't drop it. And now the Sox players run out on the field, so Jack turns, he's all business again, takes off his hat and coat, wears a fatter top hat and a tail coat around when he does all these funny things. He takes him over to the bank, and we're just about ready to go in the inning. Well, we've got Pennsylvania playing, flowing for us today. The lineup for the second game, Boston lineup is somewhat altered because of the bad day that Werber was suffering out there in the field. For the Red Sox, Melillo, second. Kramer, center. Manoish, left. Fox, first. Kohner, third. Koning, short. Cook, right. Berg, catching. And West Farrell, pitching. For the White Sox, Radcliffe, left. Kubik, center. Hart, right. Benura, first. Appling, short. Hayes, second. Dyke, third. Sue, catching. And Kennedy, pitching. The umpires, Hubbard at the plate. McGowan at first. And Ormsby at third. And now here we go to the second game of the doubleheader. Kennedy winds up, throws the first one, and Malone takes it wide for ball one. He reaches for the next one. He hits a fly out to right center, but Haas is there and makes the catch easily, and it's one out of the first inning. One out of the first inning for the Red Sox. And Kramer, Roger Kramer, the former Athletic, now the Red Sox center fielder, is up there to play left-handed hitter. Lillo is Chicago boy who has moved back to his old familiar second base post. Slide out to start the game. Kennedy throws the first one. Kramer hits a bomber. Dykes dashes fast over to his left. Gets it. Throws the first. And the runner is out for the second out. Dykes tore over in front of Appling to grab that slow hopper and made the throw to first base. So it's two outs in the first inning of the Red Sox. And Heine Manoish, the Boston left fielder, is up there at bat. Manoish up there at plate. I see left-handed hitter. And the first pitch to Heine is wide for ball one. One ball called. Kennedy winding up again. Throws, and the hitter swings, hit a high fly, going foul down back at first base. Benora's following over there towards the stand and makes the catch. He reached out and made a catch with a gloved hand. Just reached out as though he thought he was going to just about at the bench, and Meyer was going to have to do it to keep from colliding, and he looked very dainty as he grabbed that ball, and then as he turned around, he had to hurdle because Manoish was mad and threw the bat towards the bench and almost hit Benura in the feet. So it's three out, no runs, no hits in the first inning for the Red Sox. And the score is nothing to nothing as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the first inning of the second game. The White Sox won the first game by a score of 9-1. Very happily surprised a little while ago between games, in fact, to see two very good friends of ours walk in. One is Streeter's gift to the vendors at the ballpark. They haven't found him yet, but he'll be a constant parade of them up here to see Alex Robb pretty soon. And with him came in that grand old baseball player of many, many years, one of the greatest outfielders the game has ever known, the old Gray Eagle, Chris Speaker, who spent a year here as a co-broadcaster and gave us more competition than I want in any one year. The first pitch is a strike on Ratcliffe, the first White Sox hitter. Strike over the hard plate about waist high. One strike on Ripper. And the hitter started to swing at the next one. Stopped. The ball came over the plate anyway. And it's two strikes on Ratcliffe. Two strikes to count. Goes once more. And the Ripper swings at a high fly to short center field. Center fielder coming in. Short stop going out. And Malillo dashes over to make a fine running pass to that ball in short center field for the first out. But the Red Pitcher just can't do anything to get a base hit this afternoon, although the Ripper hasn't been meeting the ball very well today. They've had him slowed up on his swing, hasn't been hitting the ball very hard. I told you the vendors would spot our friend Alex pretty soon. Finally located him there. He starts on Red Hots. I don't know what it'll be next. Pitcher throws now, and Kramer took the line smash to center field, and Kramer comes in to make a great diving catch of the ball. Looked for a second, though he was going to stop it, and I think Jimmy Dyke thinks he did. Kramer took a dive for the ball, and Jimmy thinks that the ball hit the grass first. He goes out and questions first umpire Ormsby, and now he goes out to ask Bill McGowan about it. Billy Webb, the coach, also running over. It was a great play whether he caught it or trapped it. But Kramer came tearing in fast and made a diving catch, getting along on his shoulder. Ball stuck in his glove. Now, whether it hit the grass first and then hopped into the glove or landed in the glove direct, it's hard to tell from this distance. Jimmy Dykes thought he trapped it. But both umpires, McGowan and Ormsby, thought that he had made the catch and so ruled. Dykes is pretty sore as he walks off the field, kicks dirt a little bit, and makes another remark at Ormsby as he starts back to the dugout. And Billy Webb comes back to the coaching line. Mentally on those plays, it's a hard decision to make always. The umpires can't get out there fast enough to be alongside of the outfielder, and they have to call it as they see it. But the fact that both umpires saw it as in the glove would indicate to me that it really was decidedly in the glove. There's no question on their part. I was watching them, and both their hands went up at the same instant. Both hands went into the air without any hesitation. So it's two out in the first inning, and Hossett hauls the first pitch off into the stand to left the plate for strike one. And the hitter starts for the next one. Hoss drives it out in the deep short corner, makes a great play to get the ball there, and Clay makes a long try for first base. The throw is wide, and Hoss was in there anyway. Cronin took the only chance he could to make any kind of a play there by making a long throw from deep short very hastily, and the throw was wide, but he wouldn't have gotten the runner anyway. The base hit for Hoss, and it puts him on first base. A two out in the first inning for the White Sox, and Zeke Benora, the White Sox first baseman, is at bat. Zeke hits one into right field for a base hit. Hoss makes the turn at second. The ball goes to Cook, who throws in very fast and gets the ball across the infield in a hurry. So Mule turns and goes back to second base. Single to right field by Benora. He's really hitting that ball, my friends, and how he's hitting it. And it puts White Sox runners on first and second with two out of the first inning, and Luke Appling is at bat. Appling up there at the plate. Yeah. Root takes the first one for a strike over the inside corner. He turns around more or less in surprise when he hears the call to strike. It looks pretty good. To the inside corner, a little above the knees. And it's one strike. And he hits the next, a high fly down the right field line, but Cook is across to the foul line waiting for it. Has it, and it's three out. A long rough fly. It was just in fair territory, just inside the foul line, but Cook got it easily for the third out. So it's no runs, two hits, two men left on base in the last half of the first inning. And the score is still nothing to nothing between the Red Sox and the White Sox at the end of the first inning of the second game. The White Sox won the first game 9-1. Make sure the oil in the crankcase of your car is right. Use only new Texaco motor oil of the correct SAE grade for your make and model car. Texaco is not only correct in viscosity, but you can be sure of a sweeter running, trouble-free engine that will save you money, because the new Texaco motor oil stands up under all driving conditions. Jimmy Fox is up there at the plate to start the second inning now for the Red Sox. Husky, dangerous right-handed hitter. Kennedy turns around. The outfielders all move way around to the left. Left side of the infield playing back pretty far. Kennedy pitches and Jim swings with a ball. Oh, it takes a very high hop and bounds over Appling's head into left field. Ratcliffe juggles the ball momentarily, but gets a hold of it and throws it into second base, chasing Jimmy back to first. That ball took a funny, very high hop. Was hit right straight at Appling, and it looked for an instant as though Luke was going to be able to get it. But when it landed, it bounced probably 10 or 12 feet in the air, way up over Luke's head, and he couldn't get up fast enough to get it. And he wasn't set for a hop like that. Now Conrad's bat follows the first pitch into the second deck above first base, and it's strike one. There's a ball wide and low, and Kennedy threw that so hard that he fell on all fours after letting go of the ball, and Sewell and Dykes walk in to talk to him, see if he's all right or hurt himself, give him a chance to pull himself together and get settled down. It's 1-1, one ball and one strike on Croner. Boy, they haven't got names that sort of hook up in this club. Kramer, Croner, and Cronin. It's sort of a cycle around there. Finally sits on the slab again and pitches. The runner's on the go, and the hitter hits one down the right field line. Hoss is racing over fast, but it lands out of his reach. Bounds clear down to the right field corner. He gets it, and it bounds into the grandstand down there. And by ground rules, is a two-base hit, which puts the batter back on second base and Fox back on third. Now Joe Corman, the manager, is going out to query the umpires on that. I don't see where there's any argument. The ground rule says that a fair hit ball that bounds foul or bounds into the grandstand is by ground rule a two-base hit, and it bounds in the grandstand. That's all there is to it. There's no room for argument on any side. Two-base hit out the right field corner, bounds into the stand. The corner on second base moves past to third. And the Red Sox now have runners on second and third. Nobody out of the second inning, and Joe Cronin is at bat. Joe hits a bounder down to Appling, who grabs it, throws to first base, getting the man there, and a runner from third scores. The infield was playing back rather than gamble on two runs scoring on a one hit, a hit that might otherwise be fielded. The infield was playing back in normal position, and so when Appling got that ball, Cronin was out at first all right. The Fox was able to slip home with the first run of the game to give the Red Sox a 1-0 lead. And Cook, the right fielder, is at bat. With Croner on second base, one out, one run home, and he fouls the first one in the ground of the left of the plate for strike one. One strike on Dusty Cook. Kennedy throws again, and Dusty hits a high bounder out back at second base. Hayes gets it out there, throws past the first, and a very fine throw gets Cook on a close play for the second out. Dusty was going down there very, very fast, and Hayes out back to second base really bore down on that throw to first and got it over there in great style. On the play, Croner went to third base. So it's two out in the second inning for the Red Sox. One run home, Croner on third base, and Moberg, he got to at bat, takes the first one for a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike on Berg. throws again, and Moe fouls this one into the sand to the right of the plate, and it's strike two. So it's two strikes on Bird. Two strikes to count. Moe, right-hander hitter, steps right back up the plate again. Kennedy winds up, throws, and Moe swings and misses on a curveball, striking out for the third out in the second inning. But in that inning, the Red Sox scored one run to go into the lead, 1-0. One run, two hits, one man left on base. In the first half of the second inning, the Red Sox are leading the second game by a score of 1-0. As the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the second, with Jackie Hayes, the first man up there. Oh, here's the gang. Says, we took your advice and came to see a game. Good luck to you and the Sox. The Janesville, Wisconsin Post Office gang. How you like that? That's what I like. I have to show that to the boss downstairs so we know that some people are taking our advice and coming out here. Uh-huh. Did you too? Fine. Here's Hayes at bat to start the last half of the second inning with the Red Sox leading 1-0. In the second game, White Sox won the first game 9-1. And West starts that loose joint as windup is his. And a hitter hits a long wallop way out to deep left center. The left fielder is racing back and makes a nice running catch. And so Hayes is out on a long fly to Minush in deep left center. And it's one out of the second inning for the White Sox. With Jimmy Dykes, the White Sox third baseman and manager, now at bat. Harold rocks back and forth there. Finally starts to wind up. Pitches, and Dykes takes the ball. It's a little bit wide and a little bit low. One ball called. Catcher sports about that, and Jimmy turns down, thinking a little bit about it. Harold winds up again. Pitches, and Dykes gets the ball too. It missed the inside corner across the knees this trip, and it's 2-0 on Dykes. Two balls and no strikes. Winds up again, throws, and Dykes takes a strike. Pass ball over the heart of the plate above the knee. And it's 2-1. Two balls and one strike on Jimmy Dykes. Jim swings the next hit, a long foul away down the left field line, far back under the second deck. And it's two balls and one strike on Jim. 2-2. Thank you, George. Your wig wag is terrific, too. All I can see is two fingers sticking out, indicating two strikes instead of one. Barry, that's that ball three. Wide one for ball three. Old official counter George up here. 3-2 to count. Ready once more, starts to wind up. Pitches, and Dykes gets ball four wide and low, gets a base on ball. Puts him on first base with one out in the second inning. And Luke Sewell is up there at the plate. Sewell at bat. Luke waits there as the pitcher gets his time. So with the runner first pitches, and Luke swings in a high fly out into right center. Right fielder's over there calling for the ball. Center fielder there too, but Cook makes the catch, and it's two out in the second inning. Long high fly to right center, which Cook gets easily, and it's two out in the second inning for the White Sox. But Vern Kennedy, White Sox pitcher, now coming up to the plate. Vern gets a nice hand. He walks out of the dugout and walks up there. And finally arrives at the plate. He swings and hits the first pitch for a high fly into left field. The left fielder is over there calling for it and makes the catch for the third out. So it's no runs, no hits. One man left on base in the second inning for the Sox. Don't forget, we'll remind you again, you people who like to keep score and have a story to tell, be able to replay a game from your own scorecard at the end of the game, or tonight, or next week, or next year, or years from now. When you stop in your Texaco station and like to get a book, just ask for a request card. It's already addressed to me. You put a 1-cent stamp on it. You show on the other side to fill in your name and address and mail it, and you'll get your score. Here's Farrell at bat to start the third inning, and he takes the first one wide for 4-1. West is a pitcher, but one of the very good hitters in the league. That's right-handed as he pitches. and he swings again to hit a high bounder. Appling goes way back over second base. It can't reach the ball, and it peeks through into center field for a base hit. Right out over second base, bounded over the pitcher's head. And it's a single to center field by Farrell to open the third inning. It's West on first base with nobody out. And Melillo is at bat. Farrell calls for time. And Pennock turns, goes over the bench and gets West's black rubber coat that he wears out there, sort of a windbreaker, lightweight, but breaks the wind. While the wind isn't cold today, there's plenty of it, and it might tighten him up a little bit, and he's had enough trouble with stiff arms. And now, on the next pitch, Melillo hits the first ball pitch toward right field. Hayes goes way back into his left to get the ball, pivots and throws to second base, where Appling takes his throw and forces Farrell for the first out in the first inning, leaving Melillo on first base with one out of the third inning, and Kramer is at bat. Roger Kramer, the center fielder up there. Rod takes the first one for a strike over the heart of the plate just above the knee. One strike on Kramer. The throw is in the inner. It's a line drive out to left center for a base hit. Rapids over there fast, steals the ball in a hurry, goes to second base, and Melillo on the go from the start, races around to third base on the hit. Fingers to left center by Kramer, moving Melillo to third base. Rapids got the ball and threw to second, threw behind the runner. However, I doubt very much whether he could have caught him at third, so he was making sure that the other runner didn't try to go to second. The Red Sox have runners on first and third with one out in the third inning. And Mnuchin takes the first pitch inside and low, a ball one. He turns and throws fast to first. The runner leaps back to safety. The ball goes back out to pitcher. Now Kennedy pitches, then Heine swings, hit a high fly right out over Appling's head. Luke is calling for the ball, makes the catch, and it's two out in the third inning. With another dangerous hitter, Jimmy Fox at bat. Whenever he walks up there, particularly with men on bases or the score close, there's a buzz of excitement goes through the stands. But Jimmy can really pull that apple, and he's dangerous all the time. Balls in the hitter, takes a wide one across the way for ball one. One ball called on Fox. He's ready again, turns and throws the first. Kramer off the bag at leaps in the air as though he might start the second, merely wagging his arms around to attract attention. Burns pitches on, it's a curve ball very wide and low. Two leaps way off the right and knocks it down, and then and Troy is on one foot with the other foot in the air, and it's back to the infield. He peered around under his arm to see whether anybody was going to try to run, but they didn't. So he picked up the ball, which was right at his feet, threw it back to the pitcher. It's 2-0, two balls and no strike. Fox hits the next, a line smash, a beauty out to left center for a long base hit. Felix grabs the ball fast, throws it into Appling, and he lets the throw go through, but the runner gets the third base in time, and another run, of course, scores. A ringing single out to left center by Fox. Scoring Melillo with the Red Sox second run of the game and moving Kramer to third base. Oh, when that fellow hits the ball, he really hits the ball. Now the man up there, Kroner, fouls the first one back to the screen back of the plate for strike one. One strike on Kroner. It's the next one, a beauty out to right center. Another long base hit. It's going clear through the stand. One run in. Second run coming in. Corners around. Second base on his way to third. Hayes gets the ball and fires it over there. And it bounds right into the runner as he slides in safely. And it's a triple to right center by Kroner. Already has a double in this game. Scores both Kramer and Fox. And it gives the Red Sox a 4-0 lead over the White Sox in the third inning. And the White Sox are beginning to show some activity in the bullpen. Joe Cronin is there at the plate now. Cronin at bat. Kennedy throws the first one. Joe hits another terrific smash out to right center, but it's pretty high.
and Peters runs way, way back and makes the catch for the third out. That ball was also well hit, although pretty well in the air to give Mike a chance to get over under. The one that was just hit out there by Conan was low enough so that it got through between the fielding. So in the third inning, there were three runs, four hits, one man left on base. And the score is 4-0 in favor of the Red Sox. White Sox coming to bat in the last half of the third inning of the second game with the head of the batting order, Rip Radcliffe, at bat. The White Sox won the first game by a score of 9-1. Radcliffe got a hand as he walked out there. Ball is thrown out to second base, where Cronin takes the throw this time, rubs it up, tosses it to Melillo. He rubs it, throws it back to pitcher, who rubs it up some more. Farrell turns around, step on the rubber to get ready to pitch the first one to Radcliffe. West starts to wind up, throws, and Rip swings it, a long drive away out to deep right field. Right field is racing over the ball and makes the catch just in foul territory, way down at the end of the right field line. So it's one out in the third inning for the White Sox. Farrell had men on base every inning, but so far has not been hit enough to worry about. Let's take a look around at the boys and gets ready. Doctors wind up the pitch to Peter. Throws. Mike bunts the ball down toward third base. Farrell goes over, grabs the ball, juggles it a moment, and Peter gets the first base on it, and I believe it is always a base hit. Farrell got over and fielded that ball while way out of position, and then juggled it momentarily. And when he finally did get a hold of it, he made a good throw to first, but not until Peter was there. Of course, the crowd likes the kid.
I didn't get it
close. Ready to hit the next one. A hard bounder down the corner. Will make a good play way out to his left. He got the ball and throw it to second. And Felix rolled into second base to keep the runner from throwing the first. But Haas was there anyway. So Haas forces Felix to second base. The play going from corner to Melillo for the second out of the inning. Leaving Haas on first base with two outs in the third inning, and Zeke Benora is at bat. Throws and Zeke swings to hit a foul down the right field line, back into the seat, well down beyond first base, and it's one strike on Benora. One strike to count. One strike at the count. And the pitcher throws the next one. Pete takes a high one inside for a ball. And the count is one ball and one strike on Benora. One and one.
Both.
One and one to count. And it's wide for ball two now. The count is two and one. Two balls and one strike. Throws once more and it's lined inside for ball three. And it's three balls and one strike on Big Zeke. Haas on first base, two out of the third inning. He throws again and it's ball four high and inside. Farrell comes in yelling at the umpire about that one, but that pitch was way up inside. First West is rather a temperamental person by reputation, and some people have known him say he really is. But I think that West carries some of that temperament on just long enough to keep the story alive because, well, he likes to go along that way and do a lot of ribbing and kidding. And naturally, because of it, the fans like to put the rib on him pretty much. And now the Sox have runners on first and second with two out of the third inning, and Luke Appling at that. He throws, and Luke takes it inside across the waist for ball one. One ball called. He's there as he gets his sign again. As it looks back at second base once more. Pitches. And it's a third ball wide for ball two. Making it 2-0. And Farrell argues about that now. He yells at the umpire. Joe Cronin comes starting in from the shortstop position. Walks past the mound. Walks into the front of the mound. Picks up some dirt, a handful of it. Makes one more remark, tosses a handful of dirt on the ground, turns, walks back to his position, and it's 2-0, 2 balls and no strikes. He'll get the next one to drive in the center field for a base hit. Run at the second base, he's scoring easily, and Mack stops at second to throw in across the catcher, and so the runners move to second and third. The third baseman, Croner, starts to think about that, and he pushed the runner off third base, and so Benora turned right around and pushed him off away from the bag. The throw-in to the plate, running altogether too late, not grappling single. Hart scored, and it bounded high in the air over the catcher's shoulder. By the time Farrell grabbed it and juggled it a moment, Benora tried to go to third. And he got in there safely. The throw-in over to third base got there too late. The runner came running in and came in standing up. The Croner made a lunge at him, yelling about the decision, and pushed Benora off the bag with his shoulder. So Benora just reached over and gave him a shove, knocking clear into the infield. Sort of playful business, but at the same time, he's not entitled to block him off that way. And after a squawk to the umpires, while everybody's back. And Jackie Hayes up there. And Jackie swings the golf one down towards third baseman. Croner gets it and throws the first. And it's 3 outs, ending that inning with 1 run home for the White Sox. 1 run, 2 hits, and 2 men left on base. For the up-to-the-minute scores and complete batteries from other cities, we'll return to the studio.
In the National League in Boston, the first game of the doubleheader between the Cubs and the Bees was lost to the Bees. The Cubs lost. The Bees won 4-3. In the second game at the end of the eighth inning, the Bees are leading the Cubs by a score of 3-2. Warnke and O'Day, the Cub battery in the second game. Cantwell and Lopez working for the Bees. The first game of the doubleheader in Philadelphia was taken by the St. Louis Cardinals from the Phillies 13-2. In the second game, the Cards are leading the Phillies at the end of the third inning by a score of 8-2. Earnshaw and Davis working for the Cards in the second game. The Phillies using Bowman and Atwood to start with Benge pitching in the third. In Brooklyn, the first game of the doubleheader between the Cincinnati Reds and the Dodgers was taken by the Reds 4-3. In the second game at the end of the third inning, the Dodgers lead the Reds 1-0. Hallahan and Campbell, the Red battery, the Dodgers using Frankhouse and Phelps. In the single game in New York between the Giants and the Pittsburgh Pirates was taken by the Giants 3-2. Swift and Patton, the Pirate battery, the Giants using Hubbell and Mancuso all the way. In the American League, the first game of the doubleheader in St. Louis between the Browns and the Philadelphia Athletics was taken by the Browns 6-1. In the second game, Kelly is the warm-up pitcher for the Athletics, the Browns warming up Caldwell. In Cleveland, the Indians are leading the New York Yankees at the end of the sixth inning, 2-0. Pearson and Dickey working for the Yanks. The Indians starting Hildebrand and Pitlack, and Sullivan taking over the catching duties when Pitlack was hit in the head by a pitched ball from Pearson. That was in the fifth inning. In Detroit, the Tigers and the Washington Senators are tied at the end of the first half of the seventh inning, 2-2. Appleton and Millie's the Senator battery, the Tigers using Wade and Hayward. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Tyson. Take it, Hal.
Back at the ballpark for the fourth inning, ladies and gentlemen. Dusty Cook, the first man to start for the Red Sox at the count of 2-2. Dusty turned around and said something to the umpire there. I don't know just what, but the umpire seemed to get a little bit impatient because he said something again and made a gesture with his shoulders as though to say, "Now you've talked enough, let's turn around, get down to business." I don't know what Dusty was talking about because he just fouled one. The next pitch is high and wide for ball 3. And he swings again to miss a fastball inside and strikeout for the first out of the fourth inning. Finally got the definite ruling on that play in the last half of the third, and Kramer is charged with an error on that throw to the plate, which was very wide and finally bounced past Berg to catch. One out of the fourth inning, Berg now at bat, and he takes the first pitch inside for ball 1. 1 ball called. Red Sox leading the White Sox 4-1. First half of the fourth inning, the second game. Kennedy throws again. The hitter hits the bounder. Dykes goes over, tries to get the ball. All he does is deflect it out past Appling into left field. And Radcliffe comes in to get it. I imagine it'll go as a scratch hit. Incidentally, Haas' leg was bothering so much after that circuit of the bases that he was taken out of there. Kravitz has been moved to right field, and Rosenthal is playing center field for the White Sox. Now, Wes Farrell is at bat. And the first pitch is a strike over the inside corner, just about knee high. One strike on Searle. And he swings there. The next one is bounded down to Appling, who gets it, throws the second. Hayes throws the first. And Searle is out there on a very fast double play. West was trying hard. He was trying to make it, running it out very hard. But that fast double play completed things for the second and third out. So it's no runs, one hit in the first half of the fourth inning. And the score is still 4-1 in favor of the Red Sox. The White Sox come to bat in the last half of the fourth inning. Jimmy Dykes, the first hitter. Broadcast of the White Sox Boston doubleheader comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. And it comes with the permission of the White Sox and Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. I'm talking to Dixie Walker down in the field before the game today. Dixie is pretty sure now that he's not going to be able to play at all this year. He's able to warm up a little with the arm, but doctors are afraid to have him do much along that line, because they're afraid that he'll start throwing and tear those muscles apart there in the shoulder they've worked on so long. And it means that the White Sox are really in a bad way and practically must add an outfielder to the roster, even at the expense of putting Walker again on the voluntary retired list, because they have only four outfielders, and both Rosenthal and Haas are ailing. Haas was only in there because Rosenthal twisted his back the other day, and Haas had to go in with his legs still in bad shape. Now, Jimmy Dykes is at bat to start the last half of the fourth inning, and he takes the first pitch wide for ball one. It is swings to the next hit, a high fly down the right field line, but Cook races over to the foul line and still on the dead run, makes the catch for the first out in the fourth inning. One out of the fourth inning for the White Sox, and Luke Searle is at bat. Searle up there at the plate. But he winds up. And Luke swings to foul the ball into the sand at the right of the plate. And it's strike one. One strike on Searle. Searle again winding up pitches. And Luke gets strike two, a fast ball over the outside corner about knee high. So the count is two strikes on Searle. Two strikes to the count. Throws again and Luke swings in another high fly down the right field line. Cook ranging way over to the line and down near the corner makes it for the second out. Dusty's having himself an afternoon out there in this game as he's got one, two, three, four, about four men so far. Now Vern Kennedy, who bats left-handed, although a right-handed pitcher, walks around behind the umpire and catcher, takes a face-to-face. He winds up, throws, and Kennedy takes a high one wide for ball one. One ball called. And he swings it, and next one for a high fly coming down foul back of the plate. Berg is under it. He has it. And it's three out in the fourth inning. No runs, no hits for the White Sox. And the score is still 4-1 in favor of the Red Sox. Gonna run away, folks? What's the matter? Can't that fellow get enough vendors up here to keep him eating this afternoon? But oh, I see. Well, on, okay, good to see you. Well, this picture, he looks younger every time you look at him. A little gray, but he's got that gray patch pretty well built up now, but he was pretty gray when he was playing. Here's Oscar Melillo. Little Oscar down, skiing, little Colin Melillo up there. And if he again starts to wind up, throws and the hitter hits the line drive into left field. Ratcliffe coming in fast. The ball lands in front of him and then bounds back. Way back to the wall out there. The runner's around second base and tearing for third and gets in there standing up. Long drive. I don't know. I imagine they'll call that a three base hit, although there's a chance they might call it a hit and an error. Ratcliffe came charging in to try to make a shoestring catch of it, realized the last instant that he couldn't, and so tried to block it with his knees, but the ball landed and bounded past. He went through to the wall, and Melillo is on third base. Now the infield draws in close as Kramer steps up to bat. Rush balls the first one into the second deck over the left of us and down below us a little, and it's one strike on Melillo. And the next one is a ball, so the count is 1-1. It starts out as a single by Melillo and an error by Ratcliffe. The official ruling on that one. They're letting the ball go through the wall. Now the hitter hits the next one, a clean hard drive off the right field for a base hit. Single to right by Kramer, scoring Melillo easily. And it gives the Red Sox a 5-1 lead in this ball game. They still have Kramer on first base with nobody out. One run home in the fifth inning, and Manush is at bat. Manush up there, and it's a ball over the plate with too low. One ball called. Pitcher turns and throws past the first. The runner gets back ahead of the throw. Now the hitter hits another bounder out through the right field for another base hit. Runner from first round, second heads for third. Davis throws the ball over, but Appling cuts it off. There's no chance to get the runner at third. And it looks as though it just isn't Kennedy's day. And he was going to stay in there to pitch to one more man. And then if Fox hits one, why, Vern will be out of there. He just isn't fooling them today at all. Poor Vern, he's got that either control or lack of it, and when they hit him high. When he's got the control, why, nobody hits him much at all. Fox takes the first pitch high and inside for ball one. Sue walks out, hands the ball to Kennedy, talks to him for a moment. Vern takes it, walks back out onto the mound, then onto the slab. Fox steps back up to the plate again. And he's ready, pitches, and Fox starts to swing, stops three quarters of the way through and flips the bat back over his shoulder, but it's a strike anyway, down over the heart of the plate, a little above the knees, making it 1-1. Fire. Hover suddenly called time. Nobody seemed to know why. Fox steps out and asked him, and he didn't seem to know either, so guess what he did. He thought because Fox was standing there with only one hand on the bat swinging around, he wasn't ready for the pitch. And naturally, when the hitter isn't ready, the umpire calls time. Now the next one is ball two over the plate, too low, and it's 2-1. Two balls and one strike. It throws again, and the hitter starts to swing, stops. The ball gets out of Sue's glove, and the runner from first easily reaches second base. And I believe that will be a pass ball. Ball was a little bit wide, but it was seen to be in Sue's glove, and he didn't get a good grip on it, rolled out to the right, let the runner from first get to second. Now they decide to finish it up by walking him on purpose, and so they throw him ball four. Give him an intentional pass after he'd already had a 3-1 count, but the pass ball had let another man get to second. Now the Red Sox have the bases full in the fifth inning with nobody out. One run already home. They're leading the White Sox by a score of 5-1. And Kroner, who already has a double and a triple to his credit today, hits the first ball right back through the pitcher's box in the center field for a base hit. One run is in. Second one coming in. Fox reaches third base. And so the Red Sox are now well out in front. And Jimmy Dyke waves Kennedy out of the game. He's getting a nice hand as he walks off the field. And Clint Brown starts to stroll in from the left field bullpen. Three runs home this inning for the Red Sox. Nobody out, and runners still on first and third. As Prince Brown relieves Kennedy. Brown is the pitcher. He comes into the game, finds Fox on third base, Turner on first base, Coney at bat, and the score 7-1 in favor of the Red Sox in the first half of the fifth inning of the second game. And Cronin steps up to the bat, Cronin at bat for the Red Sox in the fifth inning with nobody out yet. Three runs already home, runners on first and third, and the Red Sox now leading the White Sox by a score of 7-1. The throws and hitter swings in a high fly going foul down the right field line and back into the seats well down beyond first base with one strike on Cronin. One strike to count. Man, the runner's final pitches again, and Cronin hits the beauty out to right center for another long base hit. It's got through between the outfielders, bounced through the scoreboard. One run is in, the second run in. Cronin throwing for third base. Hayes gets the ball, throws it over there, and the ball bounds away from Dykes. The runner sliding in safely, and Dykes starts over to grab it to keep the runner from trying to score. It's a triple to right center by Cronin, scoring two more runs for the Red Sox in fifth inning. And they now lead the White Sox 9-1, the same score by which the White Sox won the first game. And the Red Sox haven't let a man out yet. And the White Sox haven't put one of the members of the Boston Club out yet. Look at that. Brown throws the first one, and Dusty swings with a bounder just past the pitcher. Appling comes in fast, gets the ball, and throws the first. The runner is safe there. The ball came over, and Appling had to make a very fast play on it. And I think that will rate probably as an infield hit, although Cronin held third base on it. Appling had to come in for that very, very slow twisting bounder and took a fast man, came across fast. And while Appling threw hastily, throw hit the dirt in front of first base. Another grab for it, hit his glove and bounded away because he was reaching so far he couldn't get his fingers on it. And took the save at first. The runners are still on first and third. And Mo Berg is at bat. And the hitter swings the first one to miss it for a strike. One strike on Berg. Brown has the sign again. Pitches. Mo swings a pop fly in the right field. Not a pop fly. Great guns. That's a way out there. Way it started up, I thought it was going to be sort of short. And naturally, Cleese throws to second base after making the catch. Hold the other runner at first as Cronin scores. The very first out in the fifth inning. Six runs are already home. Now the Red Sox are leading 10-1, and Westphal, the pitcher, is at bat. First pitch to West is a strike over the outside corner just about knee high. One strike on Bell. Throws again and West rates a slow ball and lines it out to Appling, who gets it fast and then throws the ball clear back to the stand in an effort to double the runner, but he gets back to first base safely and can't go farther because the ball bounced clear out to Benoit. Both had raced out the bag, but as Appling caught that line drive, Dusty turned and dashed back to the base. Appling made a very hasty throw, and throw went clear past the mirror, but hit the front of the stand and bounded back room, so the cook couldn't advance, and therefore there'd be no error called on the play. That brings Malillo to bat again. And he swings the first one to fall in underground, back to the screen, and it's strike one. He opened this inning with that single to left, getting the third one right, so tried for a shooting catch, and stopped, and then let the ball go through to the wall. And it's the next one to drive out to right field, too, which is over fast, but it drops out there in front of him, the Texaco leaguer, and another base hit. His second one of the inning, Cook easily reaching third base on it. So the Red Sox have runners on first and third. With two outs, six runs already home in the fifth inning, and the man at bat is Roger Kramer, the center fielder. Kramer at bat. Ready, looks to run in first and third, then pitches, and Ross takes a strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike on Kramer. Watching the runners, pitches again, and it's a high one wide for ball one. So it's one ball and one strike on Kramer. One and one. Turns the ball to first base. You want to get back in plenty of time. And now the pitcher throws and Rod swings it a high fly to short left field. Raptors coming in very, very fast and makes the catch on the run nicely for the third out, and the side is retired. Some of the fans break out in a rather peculiar brand of noise, which isn't exactly complimentary applause. But it's three out, six runs, seven hits, one error, and two men left on base in the first half of the fifth inning. And at the end of the first half of the fifth inning of the second game, the Red Sox are leading the White Sox by a score of 10-1. The White Sox won the first game 9-1. Broadcast, the White Sox Boston doubleheader, comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco, Fire Chief Gasoline. Broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Red Sox. Stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. It's the WCFL at Chicago. Brad Pitt is already up there at the tape. Start the last half of the fifth inning. Paul has finished his warm-up. He gets the time, winds up, goes, and the Ripper takes the strike over the outside corner about knee high. One strike on Ratcliffe. He swings the next at a high fly to left field. Cook is waiting under it. He has it, and it's one out of the fifth inning. One out of the fifth inning to the start. With Beavis at that. Mike Beavis up there. Paul starts to wind up. Throws, and Mike takes a high one inside for ball one. One ball called. Harold winding up again, pitches, and it's a ball inside and low, so the count is 2-0. Two balls and no strikes on Beavis. And there's a wide one for ball three, wide across the knees. And it's 3-0. Three nothing to count. And there's ball four wide across the waist, and Felix gets the base on ball. It's Mike on first base, is one out of the fifth inning. And Rosenthal is at bat. Larry is back in there, although not feeling very well. He's back in there because of the injury or aggravation of the injury to the last leg. And Larry's there, left-handed hitter. Well, all the vendors should gather around. Alex is back. This pitch is wide across the waist for ball one. One ball on Rosenthal. Goes again, and Larry takes the high one wide for ball two. And it's 2-0, two balls and no strikes on Larry. That makes six consecutive bad balls thrown by the pitcher. Pitches again, and it's over the plate for too low, and it's ball three. Well, well, well. And the count is 3 balls and no strikes on Rosenthal. 3-0 to count. There's ball four wide. Rosenthal gets the base on balls. Moves through to second base. And the White Sox have runners on first and second with one out of the fifth inning. And Zeke Nemura is at bat. Nemura up there at the plate. Watching the runner's second pitches, and there's a strike. It manages to catch the outside corner. Makes the first out of 11, out of 9 pitches that has come over the plate. 2 consecutive walks on 4 pitches each. This one caught the corner outside for a strike. Earl throws again for strike 2 at about the same place, and so it's 2 strikes. 2 strikes on Bonilla. He gets the next one, a hard bounder, Coleman grabs for it. Coleman gets and manages to grab it again. He's going to throw to second, but too late, and all the runners are safe. Ball was hard hit, Coleman fumbled it, and he came limping in after grabbing it again. That's the goal, he should have had a man there. The ball was pretty well hit, but right straight at him. And I would say, and anyway, the runners were all safe. We'll try to check up and make sure in a minute, but it looks very much as though that one was probably called in there. It was very hard hit, right straight through Coleman. Looks like he's going to get a man a second, but he fumbled it, although it was a hard hit ball. He might give a base hit on. Base is a full, and Epling at bat takes it inside across the waist for ball one. We're giving the benefit of the doubt. We'll call it ahead ourselves. He winds up again now, throws and loops swing, gets a slow bounder back past the pitcher. Coleman comes in fast, gets it, throws to first, and that runner is out. One run score. Coleman seems to be favoring his right leg a little as though he hurt it on that play and the ball that Bonilla hit. When he came over, he didn't attempt to pivot and throw the second at all. He left the one run score and threw to first to make sure of that man. And you make the score now 10-2. Of course, a lot like that, they can afford to fool around and gamble on one run scoring, even on 2 or 3 if necessary. Play it safe all the way around. Make it 2 out in the fifth. Jackie Hayes at bat takes the pitch wide and blow up to ball one. One ball called. And there's a strike over the outside corner across the knee for the count is 1-1. One ball and one strike on him. White Sox runners on second and third. It's 2 out of the fifth. Jackie gets the next one and gets past him and goes clear back to Sam. One run is home. Bonilla makes the turn. Then goes back to third when the ball is recovered quickly by Berg. And he passes out and hands it to Farrell. It's a wild pitch by Farrell. It lets Rosenthal score and moves Bonilla to third base. Making the score 10-3 in favor of the Red Sox. Second game of the doubleheader. Winding up now, throws and Jackie swings in a high fly to right center. Center fielder Kramer dashing back very fast and makes the catch way, way out there for the third out. Interesting. Surveying a 2 run, 1 hit, 1 man left on base. White Sox. And the score at the end of the fifth inning of the second game, Red Sox are leading the White Sox by a score of 10-3. White Sox won the first game by a score of 9-1. And now again, for just a moment, we return to the studio.
It's lots of fun to be able to have written records of these games, play-by-play, inning-by-inning. And it's lots of fun, too, to be able to compare one game with another. And the best part of it is that now you can make your own play-by-play record the same way that Hal Totten does, by using his own system, which Texaco gives you in the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook. In it are complete instructions for keeping play-by-play records and plenty of blank score sheets. Other pages are devoted to photographs of the players, their nicknames, ages, averages, schedules of all major league games, interesting highlights of both teams. All are there for you. As you listen to these baseball broadcasts, Hal Totten will explain how to score unusual plays as they develop. Here's how you can get your copy of the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook. Just stop at any Texaco service station and ask for a request card. Write your name and address on the card, stamp it, and drop it in the mail. Children should be accompanied by an adult when requesting a card. Remember, the 1936 Texaco Baseball Scorebook is free. Send in your request card today. And now back to Comiskey Park for the continuation of the baseball game brought to you by permission of the Chicago White Sox and the Boston Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your local team. Take it, Hal.
Back at the ballpark for the sixth inning. First man at bat for the Red Sox, Jaime Munoz. And the first two pitches by Brown are wide for ball. This lines up again. Throws. And he swings with the ball right back through the box. Almost took an arm off clean on the way by. It goes through into center field for a base hit. A single center field by Munoz. Putting him on first base with nobody out in the sixth inning for the Red Sox. And bringing Jimmy Fox to bat. He's having himself quite a time in this game. Has two singles and a walk so far in this ball game. The throws, and it's a high one inside for ball one. One ball called on Fox. Ready again. Throws, and Jim takes a wide one across the knees for ball two. So it's 2-0, two balls and no strikes on Jimmy Fox. Throws again, and Fox swings it upon the right back of Hayes. He gets it, fumbles it, manages to pick it up in time to flip it backhanded to Anthony to force the nurse at second base for the first out of the sixth inning. Leaves Fox on first base with one out of the sixth inning, and Kruner at bat. He already has a single, a double, and a triple. If he gets the home run, he'll have that very elusive cycle. Kruner at bat takes the first pitch inside. Ball one. Round ready again. Pitches to the runner on the goal. Hitter hits the next one right back through the box. Hayes grabs it, sees that he can't get the runner at second. So throws the first, getting Kruner. And that's the first time they've got him out in this game. It's a two-out. In the sixth inning for the Red Sox. And Fox is now on second base. With Joe Cronin, the manager and shortstop, at bat. Low the first one, and Cronin takes it for a ball. It's over the plate, but too low. One ball called. Ready again. Pitches. And hitter swings, hit a foul ball down the third baseline. Alstack poking over there, throws it hard back to pitcher, and then turns around and drops his cap and bows deeply to the crowd. 1-1 to count, one ball and one strike. He swings hit the next one, a bounder out to the left of Appling and on into left center for a base hit. The runner is scoring easily from second base. And it leaves Cronin on first base, two outs, and one run home in the sixth inning. Score now 11-3 in favor of the Red Sox in the second game of the doubleheader. And Cook, the right fielder at bat, takes the first pitch for a strike over the outside corner knee high. He leans back to take the next one inside for ball one, and the count is one ball and one strike on Cook. One and one is the count, and the hitter swings the next hit, a pop fly right out into the infield. Poole is following it out toward third base and makes the catch. Couldn't tell for sure whether it was just there or just far, but it doesn't matter very much. And it's three out, one run, two hits, one man left on base. First half of the sixth inning. And the score is 11-3 in favor of the Red Sox. White Sox coming to bat in the last half of the sixth. Sox is up there at the plate now to start the last half of the sixth inning. Ready to go. And the pitcher starts to wind up, throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high. One strike on Dyke. Bell throws again, and Jim hits the long drive foul. Way down left field line and back into the seat. And it's two strikes on Jim.
Two strikes to Pat. Well, right there again now. He's winding up. Pitches. And Bell takes that one inside and a little bit high for a ball. So the count is 1-2.
That's a new whistle. We're not acquainted with that one.
The Wabash, huh?
Here comes the next pitch, and Dyke hits another drive left field. And Vanoose standing there instead of running back on it. Absolute play in the air to make the catch, but he got it for the first out in the sixth inning. One out of the sixth inning for the White Sox. And Luke Sewell is at bat.
Oh, when that fellow hits him, they really sell.
Well, Gypsy Stand winds up to take the first one to Luke Sewell. And Sewell swings in a high fly to left field. Left field is coming in under that one. He's waiting now. Has it. And it's two out of the sixth inning. Two out of the sixth inning for the Sox. And Clint Brown, the White Sox pitcher, is up there at bat. Brown hit it. Boy, getting his time. See that everybody's set. Shoot in. Winds up. Throws. And Kirby bats left handed over there. Right handed pitcher. Opens up eye for a ball. Right.
Well, throws once more. Brown hits the bounder down to the third baseman. Kirby gets it. Throws the first. And the runner is out for the third out. Ending the sixth inning with no runs, no hits for the White Sox. And at the end of the sixth inning, the score of the second game stands Boston Red Sox 11, Chicago White Sox 3. The White Sox, however, won the first game by a score of 9-1. And now, once again, for up-to-the-minute scores and some tape batteries from other cities and all the games, we return to the studio.
The National League in Boston, the Chicago Cubs lost both games of the doubleheader to the B's. By the first game, they lost by a score of 4-3, and the second game, the Cubs lost the game by 3-2. Warnke and O'Day, the Cub battery in the second game, Campbell and Lopez worked for the Bees in the second game. In the first game of the doubleheader in Philadelphia, the Cardinals won from the Phillies by a score of 13-4. In the second game at the end of the seventh inning, the Cards lead by a score of 11-2. Earnshaw and Davis, the Cardinal battery, Bowman and Atwood starting for the Phillies with Benge in the third and Johnson in the sixth. The first game of the doubleheader in Brooklyn between the Dodgers and the Cincinnati Reds was taken by the Reds 4-3. In the second game, at the end of the first half of the sixth inning, the Dodgers lead the Reds 1-0. Hallahan and Campbell open for the Reds with Lombardi catching in the sixth. Frankhouse and Phelps open for the Dodgers with Berries catching in the seventh. In New York, the Giants won their game from the Pittsburgh Pirates 3-2. Swift and Patton worked for the Pirates all the way, Hublin and Mancuso for the Giants. In the American League, the first game of the doubleheader in St. Louis between the Browns and the Athletics was taken by the Browns 6-1. In the second game, the Athletics lead the Browns at the end of the third inning 2-1. Kelly and Hayes, the Athletic battery in the second game, the Browns using Caldwell and Giuliani. In Cleveland, the New York Yankees lead the Indians at the end of the first half of the ninth inning 4-3. Pearson and Dickey working for the Yanks, Hildebrand and Pitlack opening for the Indians, Sullivan catching in the fifth, Lee pitching in the eighth, and Gale Hart in the ninth. In Detroit, the Senators are leading the Tigers at the end of the first half of the ninth inning by a score of 5-3. Appleton and Millie started for the Senators, Sable catching in the ninth. Wade and Hayworth open for the Tigers, with Parker in the ninth. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Totten. Take it, Hal.
Under the ballpark for the seventh inning, the first man at bat for the Red Sox, Moberg grounded out to Vanilla unassisted. Now West Farrell takes the first pitch long wide. It's ball one. One ball called. Throws again and West swings and fouls the ball back to the screen, and it's 1-1. One ball and one strike on Farrell. 1-1, it's ready again. Winds up and throws, and West takes a strike, a fastball over the heart of the plate across the chest. And it's 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Farrell. Throws again, Farrell swings the foul ball into the second deck above to the right of the plate. It's still one ball and two strikes. Still 1-2. Round throws again. Farrell goes after a submarine ball and fouls that one also up into the stands above and to the right of the plate. It's still one ball and two strikes on Farrell. Two and two, two balls and two strikes on West. Down takes quite a while. Finally, seems to have a sign. Starts his easy clean wind up. Pitchers and it's a wide one across the waist for ball three. Count is three balls and two strikes. On fail, the two and two is right. Two and two, the umpire corrected. The board shows three and two on three, so it's only two and two. And there's the third ball wide to make it three balls and two strikes on fail. Three and two to count. Waits out there for the next time. Finally has it. Starts his easy windup. Pitches in the hitter. Swings hard and misses a high fastball inside. Striking out for the second out. Boy, that really hurts. How he hurts anything like that. He certainly prides himself in his hitting ability. So it's two out in the seventh inning for the Sox. And Manolo, the White Sox second baseman, is at bat. Throws the first one and Steve swings and fouls the ball back into the left on the ground. Partway back to Sands. It's one strike on Marilla. So it's the next one for a ball inside and low. It's one and one. One ball and one strike on Steve. He much nicknamed Mr. Marilla. So again winds up and throws. Mitter swings it along, high fly to left field. Radcliffe is back near the wall. He's waiting under it, has it, and it's three out. No runs, no hits in the seventh inning for the Red Sox. And they still lead the White Sox by a score of 11-3 as the crowd stands up for their second seventh inning stretch of the afternoon. And the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the seventh inning of the second game. The White Sox won the first game 9-1. This broadcast, the White Sox-Boston doubleheader, has come to you direct from Mr. Clark, home of the White Sox of Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco, Fire Chief Gasoline. This is WCFL at Chicago. Farrell has finished the warm-up, and Rip Radcliffe is back to 7th. Rip has come up. This will be the fourth time in this game, and each time has been at the start of an inning. Led off each time he's been cut. Farrell gets his sign, starts his windup, throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate just above the knee. One strike on Radcliffe. He swings at a wide one and punches it out there. Toner comes over to make a big play and throw the man out at first. He went away over to the left, knocked the ball down, and then chasing it fast. He's got to clear the first base, getting that clip on a nice play for the first out in the seventh inning. One out of the seventh inning for the stop, and Cleavage is at bat. Mike takes the first one inside and low for ball one. One ball called. Throws again and he fouls this one into the stand to the right of the plate. And it's one and one, one ball and one strike on Phoenix. He swings the next, he punches out into left field, out between the shortstop and third baseman for a base hit. It's the sixth hit he starts have made off of Farrell. And now Rosenthal again with the bat. Larry Rosenthal up there at the plate with one out of the seventh inning and Cleavage on first base. Roseman, Larry takes a strike over the heart of the plate down around the knees. One strike on Rosenthal. And he swings it, the next one for a high foul. It bounds out to the left of the plate. And it's
two strikes on left. Two strikes to count. Waiting there again for the sign. Takes a little run the first, discovers Rose and throwing out of the batter's box. Larry steps up to the plate again. Which is ready. Through. And it's a slow one that misses the outside corner across the waist, making it 1-2. One ball and two strikes on Rosenthal. Now he swings the next one, a slow curve outside, and misses it, striking out. The catcher slaps the ball down to first base, but Kubik slides back just to make a pass. So it's two out in the seventh inning for the Sox. Kubik still on first, and Zeke Bonilla with the bat. And Zeke gets a hard smash out to left center, and some forward bounce past Kramer. And to the nasty hop with a glove and bound a clear out to the stand, and Kubik is scoring easily as Zeke pulls up at second base. I believe that will be called a two-base hit because the ball landed in front of Kramer and then took a very high hop, and all Rod could do was just reach for it and just tipped his glove and bounded onto the scoreboard. The more questionable hits and errors in this series than any I've looked at for a long time. And now Epley at bat takes a strike over the outside corner. Thank you, Eddie. That verifies it. It was a two-base hit. I called it that as preliminary calling. Epley was out of the box. He steps back up to the plate. And the hitter swings the next one to hit a high fly in the right field. The second baseman Malillo is chasing it over into foul territory and makes the catch for the third out in the seventh inning. So it's one run, two hits, one man left on base in the last half of the seventh inning. And at the end of the seventh inning of the second game, the Red Sox are leading the White Sox by a score of 11-4. The White Sox won the first game 9-1 behind the fine pitching of Sugar King. First man to bat in the eighth inning for the Red Sox will be Kramer, the center fielder. He's already up there at the plate. Rangy left-handed hitter. Brown gets his sign, starts his windup. And throws, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, just about knee high. One strike on Kramer. Reaches out to bunt the next one. He goes out to the left of the plate. Brown gets it, throws the first, but Kramer beats it out for a base hit. Base hit for Kramer, and it puts him on first base with nobody out in the eighth inning. Under that ball, Brown came in and got it, made a good throw to first, but too late. The drive is across, the bunt being perfect, and Minush is up there, taking the first one inside and lower curve ball for ball one. One ball called. Brown ready out there again, has the sign once more. And pitches in the hitter, takes a good strike over the heart of the plate about letter high to make it 1-1. One ball and one strike on Kermanush. Takes another look at the runner at first. Then pitches and Heine hits a batter down to Bonilla, who steps on first base and then throws the second to turn it into a double play. Appling taking the throw and tagging the runner out. Play was back with Kramer. We didn't see any particular play there and finally decided to stand up to break up a possible double play if he was going to be made by that direction. As a result, he came right into the ball, was waiting for him as he came in. Makes it two out in the eighth, and Foster Bat takes the third ball wide for ball one. One ball called. And gets ready again, starts that swinging wind up. Throws, and it's a ball, it's over the plate for ball two. Too low. And the count is 2-0. Two balls and no strikes. On Fox.
Hitter hits the next one and drive out into left center for a base hit. His third hit of this game. Davis gets the ball fast and throws it. Oh, boy. That ball took a terrific hop clear over the heads of both Appling and Hayes. But Venura raced over and grabbed it before he could get through to the stands, and Potts stayed on first base anyway. Jimmy's on first with two out in the eighth inning. And Kroner, the third baseman, is at bat. Kroner hits the next one to Bonner to Hayes. He got the toss to Appling at second base, and Fox is forced easily for the third out. Making it no runs, two hits, and one man left on base. In the eighth inning, first half of the eighth inning, and the score at the end of the first half of the eighth inning of the second game is 11-4 in favor of the Boston Red Sox. White Sox come to bat in the last half of the eighth with Hayes the first man up. White Sox won the first game by a score of 9-1. Farrell finishing his warm-up out there in the mound. Bird finally throws the ball out to second base. And we're ready to go in the last half of the eighth inning. Hayes at bat. Farrell shakes yes on the sign, winds up, throws, and it's a high one inside for ball one. One ball called. Throws again, and Jackie hits one down the right field line. It stays fair. He's going clear down to the corner. Bounds out against the wall in left field. And he pulls up at second base with a long throw into the infield. Comes in from Cook way down at the right field wall. Two base hits. Down the right field line by Jackie Hayes, putting him on second base. Nobody out in the eighth inning. And Jimmy Dykes getting a nice hand as he steps up there to the plate. Seven runs are tied up. Well, they've done it before. More than once. Dykes watches a slow one to by wide for ball one. One ball called. Eddie Lyons doing a little warming up out in the left field bullpen. And there's a strike over the heart of the plate about waist high to make it one and one. One ball and one strike on Dykes. He throws again, and Jim started to swing with stops to take a high one inside for ball two. And it's two balls and one strike on Jimmy Dykes. Two and one is the count. And the next one is a wide one for ball three. Making it 3-1. Three balls and one strike on Dyke. 3-1 to count. Farrell ready again. And there's ball four. It's inside and low. And Dyke gets a base on ball. So it puts White Sox runners on first and second. Nobody out in the eighth inning. And Frank Grove, White Sox catchers at bat. Frank takes the first one for a strike over the outside corner across waist high. And it's one strike on Frank. White Sox runners on first and second. Nobody out in the eighth inning. Boston leading 11-4. And there's ball one, a curveball wide and low. So it's 1-1. One ball and one strike on Groove. Throws again, and Frank gets a wide one low for ball two, and it's two balls and one strike on Groove. 2-1 the count. Frank swings the next hit, a ball into left center. Left fielder's coming in. The center fielder is also. Ball drops out there for a base hit. Little looping single into left center by Groove. Hayes scores easily. And Dyke stops at second. And Clint Brown, the White Sox pitcher, is at bat. Well, it's a pretty fair hitter, and remember that practically no one else left two pinch hits, and they're still six runs behind. They're hardly going to take him out of there as long as they haven't any real tough hitter in there. He hits the first one for a high fly to right center. Right fielder's backing up under it, gets it, and it's one out in the eighth inning.
Here's Rip Radcliffe. Gosh, poor old Rip is way overdue for a base hit.
Yesterday's game, he got only one hit and a walk in four tries. The first game today, he got a walk in five tries. He's been up four tries in this ball game so far. His second game, and hasn't been on first base yet. He's way overdue to hit one. And he takes the first pitch wide across the waist for ball one. One ball called. Throws once more, and it's a strike over the heart of the plate, waist high. So the count is one and one. One ball and one strike. Pepper swings the next one, hit an easy bounder to the shortstop, who throws the second. Melillo throws the first, but Radcliffe beat that throw there. However, the man at second and Melillo were all tangled up because Groove slid in pretty hard to try to break up that play. The runner got, the fielder baseman got the throw away all right, but couldn't make it because Radcliffe was down there a little too fast. On the play, Dykes went to third base. He's on third now. One run home in the eighth inning. And Cleavis is bat hitting an easy bounder back past the pitcher. And Melillo flips and falls down. Ball bounced back over his shoulder and out into right center with Dyke scoring and Radcliffe going to third base. I think they'll call that a base hit because Melillo, tearing in to cover second, tried to stop up as Cleavis hit that ball. And he flipped and fell down. He reached for it while falling down and reaching backwards. The ball got past him, and one more run scored, and Radcliffe went to third. I'm pretty sure that will be a base hit. Yes, it is. That verifies it. Thank you, Eddie. And now the first pitch to Rosenthal is a strike over the inside corner. He hits the next, a long smash up, deep left center, Kramer's after it. It's way over his head, going clear off the wall. Another run is in. Still another run coming in. Rosenthal is carrying to third base, and Coulton standing up. A triple to the wall in left center by Rosenthal, scoring two more runs. They never count these White Sox out of any ball game. It just won't be counted out. They're pulling up there within reach now, and the Red Sox have got a man warming up out there in the bullpen. A four run home this inning, and the score is now 11-8 in favor of the Red Sox. Farrell trying hard to get through this inning, and Pete Finura is at bat. Four run home in the eighth inning. Rosenthal still on third base. Manura at bat. Big swing, get a bounder out to Cronin, the manager. Cronin comes up with it, throws the first, and Manura is safe. Manura is safe on a close play. Red Farrell slams his glove onto the ground. Joe Cronin throws his glove in the air and runs over to talk to umpire McGowan. But Manura beat out that hit to deep short. He was going down that line as I don't think he ever went down before in his life. And Rosenthal scores to make the score now 11-9 in favor of Boston. He hit that ball to deep short. Cronin got it way back in there and threw it, but Manura was going down that line and Howie was going down it. That's his fourth hit besides the walk in this game. How many did he have in that first game? He had two hits and two walks in the first game. Three hits and four tries in yesterday's game. So I think he'd like to have these Red Sox stay here all the time. He had a triple in his first game in the series.
So now we have Luke Appling at bat. Nora on first base. Two out. Five runs home in the eighth inning. And Luke swings in an easy bounder down the box. We've got the race for first base. And Deke Appling for the third out. And Farrell in anger throws his glove clear over to the Boston bench. And the crowd's giving it to him as he walks in there. Oscar Millo turns around, says something to the umpire also as he walks off the field. But it ends that eighth inning, and what a rally that was. It pulls the White Sox right back in this ball game. They're right up there pretty close now. Five runs. Five hits. And one man left on base. In the last half of the eighth inning, and they batted completely around in that inning. The score at the end of the eighth inning is 11-9 in favor of the Boston Red Sox. At the end of the eighth inning of the second game, the White Sox won the first game 9-1. Cronin's going to be the first man at bat in the ninth inning for the Red Sox. He walks out there, says something to Herb Pennock coaching, and tosses the bat aside as he walks slowly up the plate. Don't forget to stop in. Get your request card on the way home tonight for that weekend drive for your 1936 Texaco scorebook. The book is easily obtained. It has a complete, illustrated, and explained scoring system in it. With space, official blanks, 17 games, pictures of the Sox and Cubs, the rosters, and a lot of information. Just ask for a request card, fill it out, stamp it, mail it, and you'll get your book. Now here is Cronin at bat, taking the first pitch wide across the weight for ball one. One ball called. Brown throws again, and Cronin swings at a high fast slow ball inside and misses it for strike one. Boy, he really threw a pull of string ball that time. He was up in there close, high and inside, and it's 1-1. Throws again, and Cronin takes the ball wide and low, and so it's 2-1. Two balls and one strike on Cronin. Brown goes back to use the rosin bag, walks slowly out there as Group gets another ball for him. Comes back onto the mound, is ready to pitch again. He's winding up. Throws, and Cronin swings at a high fly to right field. Pavich is coming in, but Hayes is waving him away and makes the catch out back to first base for the first out of the ninth inning. One out of the ninth inning for the Red Sox. And Cook, Dusty Cook, the right fielder, is at bat. Dusty steps up there at the plate. Just wind up. And Cook swings it, a little looping drive out in the left center for a good base hit. Throws in front of it, grabs it, throws it into second base, and Cook goes back to first. Single to left center by Cook, putting him on first base. One out of the ninth inning, and Berg is at bat. Mo Berg up there at the plate. Now the Red Sox have a right-hander warming up in the bullpen. Wilson again. Runners on the go with a pitch, and Berg gets the ball back through the box, and Appling gets it near second base, throws to first, getting the runner for the second out, but Cook gets to second base on that infield out. And it brings West Farrell to bat, and of course he's getting a bit of a raspberry as he walks up there to the plate. He was really mad out there a minute ago, wasn't he? And makes it two out of the ninth inning. And Cook on second base with West Farrell at bat. Brown keeps watching second base, finally throws, and West takes a wide one across the chest for ball one. Big Miller's running out the bullpen now. Something rather. Going to warm up the left-hander again. One ball called. And the hitter swings the ball, the next one into the stand to the right of the plate, making it 1-1. One ball and one strike. One and one to count. The
call time down there because Miller, in warming up, throwing the ball back to pitcher, he was standing talking to the other warm-up catcher down there, Coach Daly, and then he turned and threw wildly to the pitcher, and the ball went out into right field. Now, let's hit the high fly going foul down back at first base. Benora's tearing over there to the dugout and makes a nice running catch. A very pretty play because he had to tear down right in front of the bat to make that on the dead run. And he was gambling on everything there. He wasn't fooling, and he made a nice play on it. And Benora got Farrell's foul for the third out. So it's no runs, one hit, one man left on base. In the first half of the ninth inning, and the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the ninth inning of the second game, with the Red Sox leading 11-9. First White Sox hitter will be Hayes, who doubled to open the eighth inning and started the Sox on their way to their five-run rout. This broadcast of the White Sox-Boston game comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, the home of the White Sox in Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. This broadcast comes to you with the permission of the White Sox and the Red Sox, simulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. Farrell finishes his warm-up. As he does so, the Red Sox are really bearing down and warming up these two men in the right field bullpen. The right-hander and the left-hander both warming up very hard. Farrell throws now, and Hayes takes a strike over the outside corner about knee-high. One strike on Jackie Hayes. Ready again, he's winding up, throws, and Jackie swings and misses a high fastball for strike two. Boy, Farrell's bearing down now. He says, I'm going to get through this, and I don't know why. He again winds up, pitches, and it's ball one. Curveball wide and low, so it's one and two. One ball and two strikes. Ready again, throws. And Jackie drives the ball hard out to right field. Right fielder makes a dive for the ball, can't get it. Hayes is going to second base. Right fielder comes in and gets it, throws it fast, Roman saves it. But Jackie flies into second base, making a two-base hit on it. Same as he opened the other inning. Pretty sure that's what it'll be, because the right fielder tried for a shoestring catch, managed to block the ball, but couldn't hang on to it. Now Farrell comes in to talk to Berg. And he turns and walks off the field. Farrell is walking off the field, Cronin in talking to Bird, and West is all through. And the new pitcher, a right-hander, is coming into the game. Wilson coming in. That double was the end of West Farrell for today. And Wilson, who's been warming up there in the right field bullpen, is coming in now to pitch. First man he faces will be Dyke. Wilson is the pitcher. Wilson is announced as the pitcher. When he arrives there and starts his warm-up with Bird, Jimmy Dyke standing down here talking to umpire Hubbard at the plate. Wilson still warming up there. Dyke started walking up toward the plate while the crowd started to stir and talk it up. Now Wilson is through. Bird goes out to straighten out his signs with him. Mello comes in to find out what it is. Signs they're using. And they all go back to their position. Dyke is a bat. Jimmy got a walk in the eighth inning and started that rally. After Hayes had doubled, as he just doubled now. Jimmy hits the first pitch, but it's a foul into the stand, above and to the right of the plate, up here in the second deck, over to our right of wave. And it's one strike on Jimmy Dyke. One strike to count. Wilson waits there for the sign again, has it? And it's strike two, a fastball over the inside corner about waist high. Close and ready once more. Throws. Dyke swings and misses on a curveball. Low and outside. Striking out for the first out in the ninth inning. And bringing Groove to bat. Wilson got Jimmy that time. On that hook curve. Frank Groove is up there with Hayes on second base. One out in the ninth inning. Wilson ready pitches. And Frank takes the ball. It's over the plate, but too low. One ball called. She throws again, and Groove takes a strike over the inside corner, waist high. And it's one ball and one strike on Groove. One and one. Hayes on second base. One out in the ninth inning. Groove at bat. Score 11-9 in favor of the Boston Red Sox. Second game of the doubleheader. Frank swings and misses this one for strike two. The ball hops out of the catcher's glove, but he grabs it out in front of the plate. Tosses it back to Wilson, the pitcher. He relieves Wes Farrell. Ready once more, throws, and Groove also goes after a wide hook curve and strikes out for the second out in the ninth inning. And now Tony Pyatt is going to bat in place of Brown. Pyatt batting for Brown, the pitcher. He arrives up there and is all set. The shortstop, Cronin, came in to see his pitcher, talked to him for a second. Now they're all set out there again. Wilson pitches and Pyatt swings and misses a fastball for a strike. Boy, if he should strike him out, you'd really call that a masterful job of relief pitching. Ready again, throws. And Tony gets the ball. It's over the plate, too low. Hits the dirt and bounces out of the catcher's glove. He turns around, hands to umpire Hubbard, who gives it back to him. He throws it back out to Wilson. It's one and one, one ball and one strike. Now there's another strike over the inside corner above the knees. Tony stepped away from it. But it came over the plate anyway. So it's one and two, one ball and two strikes on play. Tony watches ball two combined now, very wide, and it's two balls and two strikes. Sort of a forlorn chance here, but it's always there. Getting a sign. Swings around as he got to, looks back at second base, throws, and it's inside across the chest. In fact, it was well just about there, although it almost hit the peak of his cap as he dropped down to get away from it. And it's 3-2. Three balls and two strikes on Pyatt. Pyatt steps out of the box, and the umpire called time for a moment. Watch the second base throws, and Pyatt twists away to take a ball inside and gets the base on ball. Well, that brings Rip Ratcliffe to bat. Ripper has gone hitless all afternoon. Two long ball games. A fellow who has been having a great run in his batting for the last several weeks, but hasn't had a base hit today. Been on base just once in this inning, and that was after he forced Luke Sewell out in the eighth inning. Got on base and eventually scored a run. Wilson stands there with his hands on his hips, watching the plate, getting the sign to pitch the first one to Ratcliffe. As he signs, throws, and the Ripper takes a good strike over the heart of the plate, waist high. Apparently he wanted to take a look at what this fellow had, get his eye on it before he started to swing. Ready again now, pitches, and Ratcliffe fouls the ball high into the second deck, up here to our left, and it's two strikes. Two strikes on Ratcliffe. Well, Wilson finally has the sign again. He's ready. Pitches. And Rip jumps away. The ball bounces back to the stand. Runners are going to second and third. Hayes makes the turn. But Bird gets back there fast enough to get the ball. And it's a wild pitch which puts the runners on second and third. Wild pitch by Wilson. Now, umpire Ormsby suddenly calls time. Boys asked for him to look the ball over because it had been handled by about six different fellas out there. Ormsby can't find anything wrong with it. So it goes back to the pitch. You see that ball had hit the dirt. Bound it clear back to the stand. 1-2 now. One ball and two strikes on Radcliffe. White Sox runners on second and third with two out in the ninth. And Ripper gets ball two. It's wide across the waist. And it makes it 2-2. Two balls and two strikes. Pitcher again winds up, pitches, and Radcliffe gets the dive up past the upper base hit. One run is coming in. The tying run scores. The game is tied up. The game is tied up. Radcliffe got his first hit of the game, and it's a ringing single to center. Scoring Hayes, scoring Pyatt. And the score is tied 11-11. The score is tied 11-11. And Mike Peavich is now at bat. Boy, did you ever hear more yelling around here? Peavich is up there at the plate with a runner on the go on the first pitch, and Radcliffe is safe. He's safe at second, slid in hard, and apparently he hurt Cronin. Cronin, who took the throw, is on the ground there. Radcliffe starts to pick him up. Joe picks himself up, but the umpire had called Rip out, suddenly changed and called him safe when he saw the ball roll away from Cronin. And so the tying or winning run is now on second base. With two out, two runs already home in the ninth inning, and Peavich at bat with a count of one ball. Well, I said again, infield already. Apparently they're going to walk Peavich. Yes, they're going to walk Peavich on purpose. Rather have a man there in fourth place possible. And there's ball four and he gets it. That play on Radcliffe was ruled as a stolen base. Even though the umpire had to change as he followed the course of the ball. Now the White Sox have runners on first and second. And two out, two runs home in the ninth inning. Rosenthal at bat. White Sox are warming Shalini up in the left field bullpen. Wilson is leading the game, and the new pitcher, a southpaw, is coming into the ball game. Pitch off to Miller. Wilson leading there, and the left-handed pitcher coming in to pitch to Rosenthal, the left-handed hitter. There's the announcement. Austin Miller's the pitcher. Boy, Wilson started going that time. Striking out the first too many faces. Looks as though he was going to go through the inning in great shape. And after a little conference out there between Cronin, the catcher and pitcher, Bird starts back behind the plate. And Rosenthal standing there talking to Zeke Panura. Radcliffe, who was on second base, ducked down into the bench to get a little drink of water while they were waiting. Now Oscar Miller starts his warm-up out there with Bird. And he's still finishing the warm-up. Remember, the White Sox have scored 2 runs in the ninth inning. They still have runners on first and second with 2 outs. The score a tie, 11-11. Austin Miller still going through those warm-up paces. And the umpire stands there watching. Finally, if he's had enough, that's it. The ball goes back to him. And Rosenthal comes up to the plate. Rosenthal at bat. Score try now in the last half of the 11th inning. 11-11. White Sox runners on first and second. 2 out in the ninth inning. 2 runs home. Austin Miller ready to pitch. Throws, and it's a ball inside across the waist. 1 ball called. Ready out there again. Use the rosin bag for a moment. Digs in on the mound. Ready to pitch. Let's another look out there. Pitches, and it's ball two. It's wide and low, and the count is 2-0. 2 balls and no strikes on Rosenthal. Austin Miller waits out there again. Slaps the ball into the glove a couple of times. Then steps onto the slab, watches the plate. Pitches, and it's ball three, wide across the waist, and it makes the count 3-0. 3 balls and no strikes on Rosenthal. Walks around again in circles and finally takes his place on the rubber after using the rosin bag once more. Finally pitches, and it's a strike. It got to the outside corner. They throw the ball to second base. Ratcliffe got back there in time, though. And so the ball goes back to pitcher with a count of 3-1 on Rosenthal. 3 balls and 1 strike. Ready out there again. Austin Miller takes a look back at second. Pitches. And it's ball four inside. And Rosenthal gets the base on ball. It fills the bases for the White Sox in the ninth inning and brings Zeke Benura to bat. Base is full with Benura at bat. Cronin comes in now to talk to Austin Miller. Trying to encourage him to get that ball in there. There's the one that counts. They got to get this man out of there. Cronin walks slowly back to his position, scuffing up a lot of dirt as he goes. Umpire Humbert suddenly calls time, and he's pointing down the left field line about something. Now a right-hander started to warm up, and the other pitcher, Bellini, standing there alongside of him. I thought at first maybe that was the point. They didn't want him standing in the bullpen and he wasn't warming up. But apparently that wasn't the issue, because whatever it was, umpire Hubbard consulted with umpire Armsley and nothing further happened. Time is back in, and Austin Miller starts to wind up. Throws, and Zeke takes a good strike over the heart of the plate above the knee. Naturally, with Austin Miller showing signs of not getting the ball over, he was going to take that first one. And so it's 1 strike on Benura. Austin Miller again winding up. Throws, and Zeke swings it a high fly in the left center. Left fielder Kramer's out there calling for it, though, and has it for the third out, and we go into extra innings. The ball was well hit, but altogether too high, and Zeke is put out for the first time this afternoon. After making 4 hits and getting a walk, he flies out there for the bases full. And it's 3 out of the ninth inning, ending the ninth for the White Sox with 2 runs, 2 hits, 3 men left on base. And at the end of the ninth inning of the first game of the doubleheader, the score stands a tie, 11-11. The White Sox won the first game from Boston, 9-1. And now, again, for complete resume of scores and batteries in other cities, we return to studio.
In the National League in Boston, the Chicago Cubs lost both games to the Bees this afternoon. The first game by a score of 4-3. In the first game, Leon Hartnett worked for the Cubs with Davis on the mound in the ninth. The Bees using McFadden and Lopez the entire route. In the second game, the Cubs lost by a score of 3-2. Warnke and O'Day worked for the Cubs the entire route in the second game, and Cantwell and Lopez for the Bees. In Philadelphia, the St. Louis Cardinals won both games from the Phillies today. The first game by a score of 13-4. Haynes and Davis working for the Cards, Walter and Wilson, Wilson for the Phillies. In the second game by a score of 11-8. Earnshaw and Davis started for the Cards in the second game with Dizzy Dean pitching in the eighth. Bowman and Atwood started for the Phillies with Benge in the third and Johnson in the sixth. First game of the doubleheader in Brooklyn between the Dodgers and the Reds was taken by the Reds 4-3. Stein and Lombardi, the battery for the Reds, the Dodgers, Mungo and Berry. The second game was taken by the Dodgers 5-2. Callahan and Campbell, the Red battery, with Derringer pitching in the seventh. The Dodgers using Frankhouse and Phelps to start with Brandt on the mound in the eighth. In New York, the Giants took the game from the Pittsburgh Pirates 3-2. Swift and Patton working for the Pirates, the Giants using Hubbell and Mancuso. In the American League, the first game of the doubleheader in St. Louis was taken by the Browns 6-1. Fink and Hayes worked for the Athletics with Lisenby in the second. Hogsett and Giuliani worked for the Browns. In the second game, at the end of the first half of the seventh inning, the Athletics lead the Browns by a score of 6-3. Kelly and Hayes, the Athletic battery, the Browns using Caldwell and Giuliani with Bannata in the fifth. In Cleveland, the New York Yankees and the Indians are tied 4-4 at the end of the 12th inning of play. Pearson and Dickey working for the Yanks, with Malone taking over in the ninth. Hildebrand and Pitlack starting for the Indians. Sullivan catching in the fifth. Lee on the mound in the eighth. And Galehouse pitching in the ninth. In Detroit, the Washington Senators took the game from the Tigers 5-3. Appleton and Millies worked for the Senators. The Tigers using Wade and Hayworth with Auker in the ninth. And now back to Comiskey Park and Hal Totten. Take it, Hal.
Back at the ballpark for the 10th inning, ladies and gentlemen, Shalini is the new Sox pitcher. Oscar Malone, the first man to face him, had run the count to 2-2, or 2-1, rather, and then hit the next pitch down to Jackie Hayes and is thrown out at first base. Now here is Kramer, a left-handed hitter. Shalini starts his windup and throws, and Kramer takes a strike over the heart of the plate, just a little above the knee. One strike on Kramer. Shalini winds up again. Pitches on his ball one. It missed the outside corner. Also seemed a little low. So it's one ball and one strike on Kramer. 1-1 to count. Ready again. It's winding up. And throws. And the hitter swings, hit a bounder. Appling comes over to his left, gets it, throws the first. Kramer is out for the second out of the 10th inning. And it's a two out of the 10th inning for the Red Sox. And Heine Manush, another left-handed hitter, steps up there. Bill Dietrich is keeping warm in the left field bullpen for the Sox, because they've got Shalini in there to pitch to these left-handed hitters. The next after Manush is a whole lineup of right-handed swingers. Shalini winds up, pitches, and it's a curveball wide and low. In fact, it broke almost straight down, and it goes for ball one. One ball called. Shalini takes a look around at the boys, listens to their encouragement, and then takes the plate, gets his sign, starts his windup. And pitches, and the hitter takes ball two. A little bit wide and a little bit low, and the count is 2-0. Two balls and no strikes on Manush. Roof holds the ball out in front of the plate, calls to Shalini, throws the ball back to him, and comes back behind the plate again. Winding up. Throws again, and it's strike one over the heart of the plate, down around the knees. Manush let it go by, and the count is 2 balls and 1 strike. 2-1 on Manush. Shalini winding up again. Pitches, and the hitter swings, hit a foul down past first base for strike two. Ball wasn't fouled by more than about a foot. It hit pretty hard, but he got away around on. So it's 2 balls and 2 strikes on Manush. 2-2 the count.
and two is the count. It's ready again. Winds up once more. Throws and the hitter swings, and it's another foul on the ground to the right of the plate. It's still two balls and two strikes on Manush. Two and two is the count. Winds up again, throws, and Heine hits the ball hard out into right field for a good clean base hit. Single to right field by Manush, putting him on first base. It's two out in the 10th inning. And again, a roar and a rumble through the stands as Jimmy Fox comes to bat. Jimmy, who has made three hits in the walk today, besides being on sound on a fielder's choice and scoring four runs. Fox there waiting as Cellini swings around, getting his sign, takes a look at first base, pitches, and Fox takes a strike over the heart of the plate, a little below the waist. One strike on Jim. Cellini ready once more. Pitches, and Fox swings in a pop foul into the stand above and to the right of the plate. And it's two strikes on Fox. Two strikes to count. Again, Cellini has the sign. Pitches, and Fox hits one foul. Down past third base. Always a grass cutter down there. Hits pretty hard. And it's two strikes still on Jimmy Fox. Cellini gets a new ball to pitch. Stands out there waiting for the sign. Has it. Swings around. There's a stretch. He watches the runner at first, but pitches. And the hitter swings in another foul on the roof of the stand above and to the right of the plate. It's still two strikes on Fox. Still two strikes. Cellini ready again, throws, and there's the first ball. A fast one inside just above the knees to make it one and two. One ball and two strikes on Fox. Cellini goes over, picks up the rosin bag, drops it, walks slowly back onto the slab. Swings round ready. Pitches, and Fox swings in an easy bounder right back through the box. Hayes gets the ball, puts it to Lapling, and Manush is forced out at second base for the third out in the 10th inning. No runs, one hit in the 10th inning for the Red Sox. One man left on base. And the score is still a tie, 11-11, as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the 10th inning, the second game of the doubleheader. White Sox won the first game 9-1. Broadcast, the White Sox-Boston doubleheader comes to you direct from Comiskey Park, home of the White Sox of Chicago, as a presentation of your neighborhood Texaco dealer, distributor of Texaco Fire Chief Gasoline. The broadcast comes with the permission of the White Sox and the Red Sox to stimulate interest in our national game and in your own local baseball team. This is WCFL at Chicago. Luke Appling is walking slowly up the plate. Starts the 10th inning for the Sox. Chris Ostermiller, a left-handed pitcher, finishes his warm-up. Ball goes out to second base. Cronin flips it backhanded to Melillo with his glove hand, and Oster returns it to pitcher. Walks back to his position after calling something to Cronin. And Ostermiller steps on the slab, ready to pitch the first one to Appling. He's winding up. Pitches, and Luke swings to foul the ball over the roof of the stand above and to the right of the plate, way up, almost as far out as first base. And it's one strike on Affleck. One strike to count. Austin Miller waits there for the sign again. Seems to have it. He's winding up. And pitches, and the hitter fouls another one onto the roof of the stand. About the same, well, missed the roof. Went into the second deck and bounded back down to the field. And some youngster came running out of the stand to run out in the field and get it. Two strikes now on Appling.
Two strikes to count. It's ready again. Winds up and throws, and Luke swings in a high fly in his left center. Center fielder's racing back. He's under it and has it, and it's one out in the 10th inning. One out of the 10th inning for the White Sox. And Jackie Hayes, who started both of the big rallies in the 8th and the 9th with doubles, steps up there and gets a nice hand from the fans. Hayes at bat. It's one out of the 10th inning. Pitcher winds up, throws, and Jackie takes a high one wide for ball one. One ball called. Just again winding up. Throws, and Jack fouls this one high into the second deck above and to the right of the plate for the first strike. And it's one ball and one strike on Hayes. What a scramble for that ball up there, and gets a big laugh out of the crowd here in the stand. One and one is the count with the pitcher ready again. He's winding up. And throws. And Jackie swings the high fly to short left field, but the left fielder's coming in and makes the catch for the second out. And makes a two out in the 10th inning for the White Sox. And Jimmy Dyke is at bat. Dyke's up there at the plate. Winding up slowly. Pitch to Jimmy now. He pitches, and Jim swings and fouls the ball into the stand at the right of the plate for strike one. One strike on Dyke. He waits there again, has the sign. Winding up. Pitches, and it's a strike two. A pretty one over the outside corner down around the knees. And it makes it two strikes on Jimmy Dyke. Two strikes to count. Here again winds up, throws, and Jim swings and misses, striking out for the third out in the 10th inning. And we go on to the 11th. Jim's had no fun in these two rallies. He walked to score in the 8th, but in the 9th he struck out. And here in the 10th he also struck out just when he wanted to do some real serious damage. So it's no runs, no hits in the 10th inning for the White Sox. And so we go into the 11th inning of the second game. Well, the score is still a tie, 11-11. No matter how carefully oil is refined, its usefulness can be greatly impaired if outside contamination takes place. That's why new Texaco is brought to you in refinery-sealed cans. The can is your protection, as the motor oil which goes into the crankcase of your car is the full-bodied, tough, lasting new Texaco motor oil, which left the refinery. First man at bat in the 11th inning for the Red Sox is Kroner, Johnny Kroner, the Boston third baseman. Stands there at the plate waiting. Cellini winds up and throws, and Johnny swings and misses the curveball for strike one. Cellini again gets his sign. He's winding up. And pitches, and the hitter swings and misses for a strike two. And it's two strikes on Kroner. Two strikes to count. Ready again. He's winding up. Throws, and the hitter started to swing but stopped. And the ball curved inside and low for ball one. So it's one ball and two strikes on Kroner. One and two. Sweeney taking it easy out there, rubs that ball up a little bit, now winds up. And pitches, and the hitter fouls one into the stand to the right of the plate. It's still one ball and two strikes on Kroner. One and two. Dusty Cook starts out of the dugout to walk up there. Cronin is already waiting to hit, but he goes over to talk to him. Now the hitter hits the next one, a high fly into left center, but Rosenthal is jogging over there and makes the catch nicely for the first out in the 11th inning. out in the 11th for the Red Sox. And Joe Cronin is at bat. Joe Cronin, the manager and shortstop. Some of the crowd wants to give him a little bit of a roar, sir, but that's all right. He can take it. Delaney winds up, pitches. Cronin swings and fouls the ball back to the screen for a strike. Delaney getting his sign there again, winds up. Easy swinging windup, then the windmill, then he pitches. And the hitter swings another high fly to left center. This time farther out, but Rosenthal's also waiting. Has it, and it's two out in the 11th inning. Two out in the 11th inning for the Red Sox. And Cook, Dusty Cook, the Boston right fielder, is at bat. Hitter swings and fouls the first one back against the stand above and to the left of the plate, and it's strike one. Swings hard at the next to miss a high fastball inside, and it's two strikes on Cook. Two strikes to count. He also is a left-handed hitter. Two strikes to count, but he throws again. And Cook swings and misses a slow curve, striking out for the third out in the 11th inning. So it's no runs, no hits in the 11th inning for the Red Sox. And the score remains a tie, 11-11, as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the 11th inning of the second game after winning the first game 9-1. Sox won the first game 9-1. The second game is a tie, 11-11, in the last half of the 11th inning. First White Sox hitter, Frank Group. The White Sox catcher, Oscar Miller's out there on the mound to start his warm-up. Well, boys, the fans, the little old fans, you have had lots of things to see today. Last two doubleheaders, in fact. Well, the way these White Sox can scrap their way around this league. Groove is getting a hand as he walks out of the dugout and up toward the plate. Mr. Miller's winding up, pitches, and Groove swings to foul the ball into the second deck above to the left of the plate. To the right, rather. I'm getting groggy now. One strike on Groove. Said a lot of words today, Georgie. We've been rolling them out. One strike to count. It's ready again. Winds up, pitches, and it's a high one wide for ball one, making it one ball and one strike on Groove. One and one to count. Again starts to wind up. Throws, and it's a high one wide for ball two. So it's two balls and one strike on Groove. Two and one. Oscar Miller winds up again. Throws, and Groove swings the foul. Another one onto the roof of the stand above and to the right of the plate. And it's two balls and two strikes on Frank Groove. Two and two the count. One, two, the count. She winds up again. Throws. And Frank swings and misses a high fastball inside, striking out for the first out in the 11th inning and bringing Shalini, the pitcher, to bat. And he's getting a swell hand as he walks up there toward the pitch. Shalini at bat with one out in the 11th inning.
Tony bats left-handed. As he pitches, Austin Miller winds up, throws, and he swings hard to miss a high fastball inside for a strike. One strike on Shalini. He throws again, and it's a strike two, a fastball over the heart of the plate, waist high, to make it two strikes on Shalini. Two strikes to count. There's strike three over the heart of the plate, down around the knees. He backed away, didn't make any attempt to go after it. And he's called out on strike for the second out in the 11th inning. And Rip Radcliffe, who saved his only hit so far this afternoon to drive in the tying run from the ninth, is up there at the plate with two out in the 11th inning. He winds up, throws the first one, and it's a fast strike over the heart of the plate, waist high. Austin Miller isn't fooling now at all. He struck out the last three men to face him. Throws again, and it's a strike over the outside corner across the knees, and it makes it two strikes on Radcliffe. Two strikes to count. Mr. Miller again winding up. Throws, and Rip swings it, a little dribbler back at the pitcher who gets it, throws to first base. He'll hit it off the end of the bat very weakly, and Rip is out at first base easily for the third out. So we end the 11th inning, still deadlocked, 11-11. Four tie, 11-11. At the end of the 11th inning of the second game of the doubleheader, White Sox won the first game 9-1. First man to bat in the 12th inning for the Red Sox will be Moberg, the catcher. The next time you stop at your Texaco service station, ask the operator for Marfax. Berg is just walking up there to play as Shalini finishes. Well, he's still finishing his warm-up down there. Ball goes out to second base. Mo stops to tie a shoelace. Down here at the left of the plate before he steps up there in the batter's box. So Tony walks back onto the back of the mound. Berg walks slowly up there at the plate. Shalini, his name is Italo, you know, Shalini, but the boys call him Tony. He says he likes that for a nickname. Throws the first one, and Berg hits a long drive to center field, but Rosenthal's waiting there for it, has it, ranges over into left center to get it, and it's one out in the 12th inning. One out of the 12th inning for the Red Sox. And the next man up there is Oscar Miller, the pitcher who is also getting a nice hand from the fans because he's been doing some very nice relief work. Really fine pitcher. Shalini winds up, throws, and Oscar Miller swings, hits a high fly in a short right field. Hayes is going back, calling for it, makes the catch back there, and it's two outs. Jackie had to twist around suddenly to get that ball because it didn't blow the way he expected, but he made the catch, and it's two out in the 12th inning with Melillo at bat. Melillo is up there, but she starts to wind up. Throws and the hitter swings and fouls the ball back against the catcher's mask. Bounds off to the right on the ground. Group turns and tosses it over to umpire Hubbard to take a look. In case it got cut up, but apparently it didn't. Ball goes back to Fisher. And Malone steps up to the plate again. Delaney winds up, throws, and Skeet swings it a bounder back past the pitcher. Hayes goes over, gets it, bounds up and hits him in the face. He can't seem to see the ball anywhere. Finally walks over and gets it. And time is called. Lillo turns to see how it was. Apparently, the base hit. The ball took a bad hop and hit Hayes right in the face. Couldn't see the ball for a moment. Now he says he's all right. Won't let anybody fuss over him. Hey,
first base.
Kramer's at bat, and runner gets back to first, all right.
Now Cellini pitches, and Kramer fouls this one back to the screen, and it's a strike. One strike to count. Cellini throws again and again with a runner on the goal. Kramer hits the ball hard back through the box. The second baseman knocks it down, and Appling grabs it and threw to first, but still too late. Boy, Hayes made a wonderful play on that ball. He dashed over back a second, grabbed for it, hit his glove, and dropped to the ground. If he'd held onto it, he might have gotten that man. He shortstop dashed over and grabbed it and threw to first, but Kramer had beaten it out for a base hit. And that puts Boston runners on first and second with two out in the 12th inning. And Manush, Heine Manush, at bat. He's got to pitch hard now. Cellini throws and Heine gets the ball. It just barely missed the outside corner above the knees. Pretty close there. And umpire Hubbard lifts his hands to indicate it was too low. Ought to have been higher to be a strike. One ball called. Pretty sure it was over that corner. Cellini stretches, looks back at the runner's pitches again, and the hitter hits a long foul way, way down the right field line, back in the seats, back of the foul line, and it's one ball and one strike on Manush. One and one to count. Cellini throws again, and Heine hits the ball hard to left field, but Ratcliffe's in fast, gets it, and it's three out. Line drive to left field. Ripper was playing in close. He apparently figured that out ahead of time, and was playing in close, and came dashing in to grab that line drive for the third out. So it's no runs, two hits, two men left on base in the first half of the 12th inning. And the score, as the White Sox come to bat in the last half of the 12th inning, still stands a tie, 11-11, in the second game of the doubleheader. White Sox won the first game by a score of 9-1. Davis is walking out there to start off this inning now. Boy, this is really a box score to keep in that old Texaco scorebook that you'll want to refer back to a long time. Those two great rallies. The way the Sox have been scrapping today. Here is Davis at bat. Starts the last half of the 12th inning. Score a tie, 11-11. Oscar Miller winds up to pitch the first one to Mike. Throws, and he takes a strike, a fast curveball over the inside corner just above the knee. One strike on Krivich. He winds up once more, throws, and Mike takes a fast one inside for ball one. To run the count to 1-1. One ball and one strike on Krivich. Again, Austin Miller takes that swinging windup, throws, and Mike swings at an easy bounder. The second baseman, Melillo, comes in, gets the ball, throws the first, and it's one out in the 12th inning. Melillo came scampering in to grab that ball and throw the man out at first. So it's one out of the 12th inning, and Rosenthal is at bat. Larry Rosenthal up there. Winds up to pitch the first one to him. Throws, and it's a good fast strike over the outside corner knee high. Boy, this fellow isn't wasting anything. He really lays that ball in. Fritz winds up once more. Throws, and Larry fouls the ball back into the second deck in front of us over to the right a little. And it's one strike, or two strikes now on Rosenthal. Two strikes on Larry at bat with one out in the 12th inning for the White Sox. Open up. Oscar Miller winding up again, throws, and the hitter swings to foul another one back toward us, but, yeah, it lands down in front of us also. The second I thought it was going up on the roof, but it didn't. And it's still two strikes on Rosenthal.
Ready once more. He winds up. Pitches, and it's a curveball wide for ball one, making it 1-2. 1-2. One and two. And he hits the next one, a line drive out to right center. It's going out there pretty good. Around first base, on his way to second. Ball is fielded by Cook. He throws it in fast, and Rosenthal is on second base. A flashing double to right center by Rosenthal puts him on second base with one out in the 12th inning. And Zeke Benura at bat. Chances are they'll walk Benura to take a chance on Appling. Not that they are sliding Appling, but as they did earlier, walk a man to make fourth place possible. It often works out to your advantage. What they did in the case of Previch in the 9th inning. Yeah, they're going to walk him. Of course, the crowd yells. They don't like that very much, but all there is to do, there's ball 3-2. All three will be coming up right away. And then it'll be up to Appling. There's the third ball. Taking no chances. He really throwing that ball well outside. And there's the fourth ball. And it puts Benura on first base. The White Sox have runners on first and second with one out of the 12th inning. And Luke Appling is at bat. Appling at the plate. Looks at second base and throws, and Luke takes the ball. It's over the plate, but too low. One ball called on Appling. Waiting there again for the sign. Steps onto the slab. Looks at his catcher. Now he's ready to pitch. Pitches, and it's ball two inside across the knees, making it 2-0. 2 balls and no strikes on Appling. Nothing is the count. And there's a strike, a fastball over the heart of the plate, waist high, and the count is 2-1. 2 balls and 1 strike on Affleck. So again, leans over to get the sign. He's ready. Pitches, and Luke swings it, a foul down past first base. It's 2-2. Mel Almada was running down the bullpen. Turned around and fielded that ball as it was bounding off the front of the stand. Keeps on down to the bullpen. Warming up a little down there. Apparently going in to take somebody's place or to pinch hit. Unless they get around that far, but I think he just, in case he may go out here, take somebody's place in the outfield. Manush probably. The hitter hits the next one. A line foul. Bounds into the Boston bench, and the boys start to wave flags down there. White flags of truth. Waving towels at the hitter to say, don't pick on us, we're back here. 2-2 is the count, 2 balls and 2 strikes on Appling. Austin Miller walks slowly around onto the slab again after using the rosin bag. Ready to pitch once more. He throws, and Luke hits another foul into the second deck, down beyond first base. It's still 2 balls and 2 strikes. Still 2-2. Walk slowly back onto the slab again after talking to Joe Cronin. Drops the rosin bag at his feet. Steps onto the rubber. Watches for his sign. He's ready. And pitches. And Appling fouls another one into the second deck above first base. It's still 2 balls and 2 strikes on Luke Appling, who's batting for the White Sox in the last half of the 12th inning with a score of tie, 11-11. White Sox runners on first and second with one out. White Sox won the first game 9-1. Game tied up at 11-all in the last half of the 12th inning. They're all ready again. As he's signed, he's ready to pitch. Pitches,
And Luke gets the ball hard out the box. He grabs it, races for first base, beats Appling. The runner's going to second and third. Fox got that hard smash by Appling and raced to first base to beat him for the second out, putting White Sox runners on second and third. And Jackie Hayes at bat. Again, Cronin is over conferring with Ostermiller. I don't know whether they're going to walk Jackie or not. The one run would beat him, so the idea is to keep the bases filled as long as third base and third and second is occupied to make it possible to make forced plays all the way around. No, they're going to pitch to him. The figure is luck has run out. He's not going to hit, and they're going to pitch to him. And the first pitch is wide across the way for ball one. First base is faking. Well, they won't give him anything good to hit at, that's sure. They'll pitch to him, but give him nothing good. Rather walk him than give him a good ball to hit. Figure he might go after a bad one. Winds up, throws again, and Jackie swings hard and misses the curveball for a strike. The count is one and one. One ball and one strike on Hayes. Ostermiller waits there again. As he's trying, he's winding up. Throws, and Hayes hits the ball off the right field for a base hit, and the Sox win 12 to 11. Right fielder got the ball and threw it wildly in, but the pitcher gets it and sticks it in his pocket. A single to right field by Jackie Hayes wins the ball game. Hayes started the two rallies that resulted in tying the score in the eighth and ninth innings, and then drove out the winning hit now, a single to right field, which scored Rosenthal from third base and wins the game for the Sox by a score of 12 to 11. He totals in that inning one run, two hits, two men left on base. Totals for the ball game. White Sox had 12 runs, 16 hits, one error, and the number of men left on base, 13 men left on the bases. The Red Sox had 11 runs, 22 hits, one error, and they had 10 men left on the bases. Fortunately, neither error had any part in the winning of the game. The winning time of the game was 3 hours and 7 minutes. The winning pitcher is Shalini. The losing pitcher, Ostermiller. In the first game, totals on the first game, the White Sox won 9-1, making 9 runs, 16 hits, no errors, with 12 men left on bases. The Red Sox, 1 run, 6 hits, 1 error, and 7 men left on the bases. The time of the game was 1 hour and 56 minutes. The winning pitcher was Kane, and the losing pitcher, Russell. The second game, the White Sox made 5 runs in the 8th inning and 2 in the 9th to overcome a 10-run lead that the Red Sox had piled up. They'd been leading them first 11-1, then 11-3, then 11-4. They made 5 runs in the 8th, 2 in the 9th, tied it up, and then they won in the 12th. The total, the Sox had 12 runs, 16 hits, 1 error, 13 men left on base. The Red Sox, 11 runs, 22 hits, 1 error, 11 men left on the bases. Winning pitcher, Shalini. Losing pitcher, Ostermiller. And if I'm not mistaken, this double victory moves the White Sox into third place in the American League standings. Second place next, my friend. Second place next. The White Sox will be out of town playing in St. Louis tomorrow, and we will broadcast that game from a wire report starting about 5 minutes before Chicago time. And speaking for George as well as myself, Hal Cotton bids you good afternoon from Comiskey Park, and we return to the studio. Goodbye now.